Welcome to Grease Spot Radio. This week's episode, we're going to interview Belle from Orlando, Florida. She tells her story of things in the way and when she decided to leave. This is going to be a two-part episode. We'll present part one today, and within the next week or so, we'll have the second part up. So without further ado, let's go to the interview, where Belle starts off by telling us the two times she took the class.
Yeah, I officially took the class with the Way Ministry in November of 93.
And you also unofficially took the class at one point, too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. About a year before that, I took the class. The old-timers are going to love this. I took the class on audio cassettes in this girl's living room at night, like an hour and a half at a time, while she fixed dinner for her kids and put them to bed and talked to her husband and did whatever they do when we get home from work. Me and this girl worked a night job together. We got off at 8:30 every night, and we would go straight to her house, and she would set me up in the living room listening to these tapes while she did all of her other stuff. So I took it on weeknights, and then on Saturdays, we would do 3 hours at a time, but I didn't have a syllabus. I didn't have any charts. I didn't have anything to look at. It was just me and the tape recorder.
Wow.
So, at that time, which is really hilarious, I didn't know much about the Way or the ministry at all, but I knew that this was from the Way Ministry, and I actually thought that I was a part of the Way Ministry when I did that.
But then one day you found out that you weren't, when you saw a blue book somewhere.
Yes, I had finally gotten one job. I had been working two jobs for 2 years, and I finally got a job that was going to pay enough for me to only have to work one job. And I had quit going to this fellowship with these people for a while. There were just some things that were iffy and questionable, and so I quit going. Of course, I was young, so I wasn't very faithful to much of anything at that time. But I saw this girl reading the blue book at lunch at work one day, and I said, "Oh, are you with the Way?" And I'm sure she was totally shocked. And she was like, yes. And I said, "Can I come to Twig with you?" That was probably the easiest contact she ever got. So that's when I found out there was a difference between the Way that I thought I was a part of and the real Way. And then I officially took the class with the Way Ministry, and that was the 10 minutes early in your seat, sitting, watching the video. I don't think I heard a thing the first night that we were in there, because I finally had a faith to go with this voice I had been listening to for so many hours. And I think I just sat there and stared at VP through the whole thing, going, he does not look anything like I pictured with his voice. I don't think I heard any of the class.
So things moved on. One thing you had mentioned earlier was the first meeting that the Moynihans had when they arrived.
Oh, shortly after they had arrived, we had there's this one couple. I laugh about it now, but their house was designed to run classes. They had a garage, and over the garage they had this one huge room that was the classroom. And on the other side of the hall, they had Command Central, where they could control all of the audio and video for the two different TV sets, two or three different TV sets that they had in the room. So they specifically designed this house to have this, we called it the upper room, to run classes in. And this couple had been fellowship coordinators forever. I mean, they were just revered for how long they had been twig coordinators. They had twig splits all the time. Seemed like a perfect, wonderful family. And I got this phone call. There's an emergency meeting being called. You're expected to come to this hotel at this time. Dress your best. And I'm thinking, okay, never had a special emergency meeting called before. So I was very intrigued. And we got there and everybody was there. It was the whole, I think Orlando was one branch at that time. So it was the whole city. I mean, there was hundreds of people there. And Bob stood up in the front of the room, and all of a sudden he just starts slamming the husband of this couple, talking about how he was cheating on his wife, and I don't even remember all the other stuff, but because I was so in shock. Here he is airing this man's dirty laundry. The wife and the kids and his mother were all there in the room, and Bob went on for about an hour or so about this man and all of the evils and foibles of his life, and it was awkward. It was so uncomfortable. I've never heard anybody slammed like that, especially not by a minister, and in front of his whole family, in front of the whole church. And I think he explained how this was in line with the, you know, between your brother and you, and then you and another, and then before the whole church. And he justified doing all of that using those scriptures, and that it was important for us to know because we needed to be able to recognize evil when it was right in front of us. And I was appalled. That was my first exposure, I guess, to some of the more odd practices that the Way Ministry has. And I thought then it was just an isolated thing. I thought everybody in the Way Ministry was perfect. Totally Stepford. And I was oblivious to the fact that anybody with the Way Ministry had problems in their lives. I was in a little utopia of my own, I guess. And I was struggling to be as happy and in control and all-knowing as I perceived everyone else to be. And so this was a major blow for me. Really uncomfortable, eye-opening experience.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, I thought it was a rare occurrence. I never expected to find out, like I did later, that this happened all the time.
So let's follow along. Where's the next bump in the road?
Well, that was when the Moynihans first came.
Right.
So the next bump in the road would probably be our wedding. And then...
I often refer to my wedding as a bump in the road, too, I think. Yeah.
It's more like a pothole.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's there, and so you have to acknowledge it.
Right.
Otherwise, it's the elephant in the room. So my wedding, and then we had used everybody in the ministry as worker bees in our wedding. And right after we got back from our honeymoon, we had to move, and there was no way we were going to ask people in the ministry to help us move after all the other things that we had asked them to do in preparation for our wedding and on our wedding day and follow up to all of that. So we had to move to a new apartment. We did most of it on our own. We paid one company to move the big heavy stuff. And we had no money. We were broke. And I think since the first or second weekend we were back from our honeymoon, still in the midst of all these boxes and trying to meld together two households. And there was a LIM meeting for the whole state of Florida, and it was going to be about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from us. And we weren't going to go. We planned on not going because, one, we were beat and still unpacking and adjusting to living together. And we were newlyweds. We wanted to be newlyweds. We wanted to play house and chase each other around the place. And they wanted us to go to some weekend retreat, LIM meeting. And the Densmores were appalled that we didn't even consider going. And we told them that we couldn't afford to get a hotel room down there, and that driving 2 hours each way was going to be a drag on us, and we were already tired. And they insisted that this is, you know, the spiritual event of the year, and that Bob Moynihan's running a LIM meeting. You don't want to miss the teachings and the spiritual fervor that's going to be there, and the hot Bible that's going to be taught, and it's a very spiritually significant event. And so we went, and I was miserable. I think we both were miserable the whole time, and we were tired and bickering because neither one of us wanted to be there. And I thought, oh, I hope this isn't the way this is going to go, you know, with us not wanting to go to meetings and being guilted into going. I was wrong. That happened all the time after we got married. So that was disgusting.
So things are going very well in your marriage. Tell me how things were going as far as the ministry in relationship to your marriage.
Yeah, I guess that's about the time they upped it to 3 nights a week, and then they added prayer partners. So you had somebody that you had to pray with every single day, and it couldn't be your spouse, which I thought was utterly ridiculous. And I brought that up on a number of occasions. Obviously, I never got anywhere. So we always had our prayer partners, and you've got to coordinate those phone calls. And then we were supposed to go witnessing with our prayer partners once or twice a week. I can't remember. But it just, things slowly kept getting added to our plate. And I think it's a lot like X10 described in the Waycore, probably Waycore thread, and Oakspear calls it the frogs in the warm water deal. They were slowly starting to turn the temperature up on the water, and we didn't recognize it because it was a little bit at a time. You know, it went to 3 nights a week, and then it went to 3 nights a week plus a prayer partner, 3 nights a week plus a prayer partner plus a witnessing night, 3 nights a week plus prayer partner plus witnessing night plus now we want you to be assistant household fellowship coordinator. So then you have that meeting once a week or once a month, I can't remember. And that was put on our plate. And then they want you to do reports on the fellowship nights. So we had secretaries that had to write down who was there, who wasn't there. If they weren't there, why weren't they there? Who taught, who led, who sang, what you sang, who taught, what they taught on, who manifested, how many people were new. I don't remember. There was like ungodly amounts of information we had to get for each fellowship. And being the assistants, that's what we did. And we had to keep track with all of that. And you just start getting so busy. I mean, every night of the week was something Way Ministry related. So even if you wanted to have time for family and friends who weren't involved in the way, you didn't have time for them. Mm-hmm. So So you couldn't have those relationships. But then Craig started, you know, the teachings with living sanctified and be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Well, then everybody became an unbeliever that wasn't involved in the way ministry. And then it was, if they don't want the word, then you don't give them your time. Family, maybe you have to spend time with family, but you know the things to watch out for when you're with family. But friends, you don't need any friends that reject the word. And so then you don't have any friends outside of the way ministry. And then those friends that you do have inside the way ministry aren't really friends. They're just people you go to fellowship with. And that's because you were assigned fellowships. You were told where to go to fellowship. You didn't get to pick your own fellowship. That came with the Moynihans also.
So now you're at the point where your husband's got some outside activities or activities outside of TWI.
Yes.
And you're happy that he's finding other interests, which I'm sure is probably good for the marriage, I would imagine.
Yes, very much so. Because then we have something else to talk about.
Right.
Something besides the way ministry. And did you, you know, spend your hour in the Word this morning? Did you call your prayer partner? Actually, I don't think we had prayer partners after that. But, you know, it wasn't always ministry-related talk going on. There was something else for us to talk about besides our jobs and the way ministry. And I tried to be as enthusiastic as I could for that. So things were going well, and I had hope. I had a lot of hope. But mind you, I'm going through this by myself. I don't know that anything's wrong with the way ministry. I just know that I'm disagreeing with a lot of the teachings, and I'm starting to see a lot of things that don't make sense and not getting answers when I ask for them, and realizing that it's not okay to bring up concerns or dislikes or disagreements, and that it's not all butterflies and rainbows. I mean, our life was good. Life was fine. Looking at it from the outside, you would think that we were living, you know, living nicely, not, you know, extremely comfortable by any stretch of the imagination. But we had the money for him to do those things. And we looked, I would think, normal from the outside. But on the inside, I was struggling. I was struggling pretty hard trying to figure out how to make this work. You know, I'm starting to not like this group. I'm starting to resent their imposition on my time, their rules, their regulations. But they use scripture to back up everything that they tell us. And so how can you fight back with that, especially when you don't know the scriptures like I don't? I never mastered memorizing scripture or being able to put things together like they can. And I can't with my ex either. He was a walking Bible. I mean, he had a, I always get this word wrong, photogenic memory. I always say photographic memory. he had a photogenic memory, and so he knew scriptures forward and backwards. And you could say a topic or a subject, and he could come up with all these different verses. And he was very adept at remembering what Craig Martindale had taught, or what was taught, you know, by Moynihan or Twigg or anything. He just had a great memory. And I couldn't battle with that. There was no way for me to counter all of these things that I disagreed with. It was like I was unarmed, and they had all the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So it was frustrating, and there was nobody I could talk to about this because you don't really know who you can trust inside the group. And you also think you're the only one that's thinking those things because everybody seems happy and wonderful and life is good when you go to the meetings and the fellowship. And so I felt like a hypocrite. You know, there's no way I can live up to the standard. And I think the standard is ridiculous, but I don't have the weapons to fight back. And I don't have anybody that I can talk to about that. So it was very disconcerting.
So what did you do?
I just struggled doing the best I could.
Mm-hmm.
I kept encouraging him to do things. And then if I could find something in the Word, I just started focusing on little things, trying to find little inconsistencies in what they were teaching. And that's when I came up with the Epiluo studies I did. Epiluo, remember letting the dogs loose on the game?
Oh, okay.
I found that to be an extreme example. I was preparing a teaching, and I decided I was looking at my ex had all these study things. And so I had looked it up and was trying to piece it together, and I couldn't get letting the dogs loose on the game to fit and match the way that I looked at and it appeared to me in the study guides. So I asked Mike to help with that. I found a couple of other things. Eventually, after I found Waydale and then Greasebot, Oak Spear actually helped me finalize that, to really understand that. Because even the way that I was seeing it was different than the way that it was,
mm-hmm.
Actually. And once Oak Spear helped me with that, I was able to see it really clear. And in fact, I taught it in fellowship. And actually had a confrontation with our WayCorps coordinators about that at one time, and nothing ever changed, because then when they started teaching the class live after Craig resigned, they're still teaching it the same way, even though it's wrong, and they know it's wrong now, because it went from my fellowship coordinator to, you know, she showed it to the Moynihans, because she lived with them. And it went to the Way Corps that were our branch coordinators. I taught it in fellowship, and I'm sure in somebody's report somewhere that it ended up getting passed up to headquarters. And they still taught it wrong in the live class, and they knew that it was wrong, and that I knew it was wrong, and that I totally disagreed with how they were teaching it. And that they didn't change it. So, and then they called me a nag and persistent and all kinds of horrible things for not letting it drop. Boy, I let my dogs loose on that one, didn't I? I totally tangent.
Now, what year are we in with your husband's outside interests and you're no longer coordinators in that?
It was either 99 or 2000.
Okay. 2000, you get the infamous email that you're not supposed to read.
Yes. One night, we got a phone call from our household fellowship coordinator, and she was frantic. You've gotten an email from Bob Moynihan. Have you checked your email? Did you get it? I don't know. We haven't checked our email yet. Well, when you check your email, you're going to have one from Bob Moynihan. Just delete it. Don't open it. Don't read it. Believe me, you don't want to know what's in that email. And the call went to my ex-husband. If it had come to me, I'd have gone in there and opened the email. But he is so obedient. He went in and totally deleted the email. And who knows what was in that email. But that was an email definitely about the lawsuit with Craig Martindale, because the next night we were called to an emergency meeting down at the Moynihan's house. And that was when they told us about the first lawsuit. So I would love to know what was in that email. And I don't even know who all it went to, who it was supposed to go to, and how many people read it. It may have gone to all the fellowship coordinators. It may have gone to all the wait for in the area. I'm not sure, but I sure would like to know what he said. I know it was ranting about Craig. But I thought that was funny. He's got this email. Don't open it. Who's not going to open and read an email you're already told not to open and read? My ex-husband. He's so freaking obedient.
Okay.
So didn't you even, peek at it? No, I just deleted it. That's what they said to do.
So you went to this emergency meeting. What?
So we went to this emergency meeting, yes.
And what was handled there?
That's when they told us about the first lawsuit. It was set up. It's odd because the room was set up formal, with the string chairs and stuff, instead of a circle like normal fellowship meetings would be. So it was a formal setup, formal atmosphere. And Bob was at the front, and he read the article to us about the first lawsuit. And they talked about this being a one-time consensual affair. And they didn't share a whole lot more about that. They asked if there were any questions. And this was also new, and everybody was totally floored and shocked that I don't think there were a lot of questions that night. The normal questions that you would have had: who knew about this? How long did it go on? Why wasn't something done? What's going to happen? What's Craig going to do? Just different questions like that. And most of it was answered with, I don't know. We don't know a lot at this point. And that was about all we heard about that. And then the next, it was shortly after that, wasn't it? The second lawsuit came out. We were called again to another emergency meeting at the Moynihan's and told when to be there. And we thought that that meeting was going to be about the lawsuit and maybe about it being dropped and what was going to happen with Craig and stuff. So we were shocked when we sat there and found out that there was another lawsuit about the same stuff. And so then people are asking questions like, well, what's going to happen to Craig? Isn't he going to step down? And who knew about this? People had to have known about this. And why wasn't something done to stop him? And Bob and Dottie, Bob said that he had heard rumors, but that when someone would come to him with a rumor, he would tell them to go directly to that person. And I'm thinking the whole time he's talking, I'm like, they're not talking about somebody leaving dirty dishes in the sink overnight. They're not talking about somebody bouncing a check. We're talking about facts here. We're talking about total irresponsible and unacceptable behavior for a minister of God. And so you're going to tell them just to go talk and handle it one-on-one with Craig? I didn't think that was a very good response. especially coming from Bob Moynihan. And then to find out that Dottie counseled those women after she led all of us to believe that she had, they had no knowledge, particularly that she had no prior knowledge to anything going on. And they were very supportive of Craig and Donna at that meeting. And I always wondered if they recorded those meetings so they could tell who said what and who might be a problem, mm-hmm. so to speak. I wouldn't put it past them to have recorded those meetings. So they, at that meeting, they insisted that we stay off the internet and that we not go look for information on the internet. And it was pretty, they were pretty adamant about it. So I started thinking, there's definitely more to this story than they're telling us. And they don't want us to know, or they wouldn't tell us not to go on the internet. And it's not always a good idea to tell me not to do something. So. the next morning when I went to work, I looked on the internet to see what they didn't want us to see. I also wanted to see the lawsuit because all they did was read the newspaper articles to us. We didn't even get to see the newspaper articles or hold them in our hands or take copies of them home to chew on. You know, is whatever information you could absorb during the meeting, that was the information that you had. And so you didn't have anything to contemplate on. You didn't have anything to read. You know how, like, if you hear something the first time, you might not grasp everything, but if you've got it in writing in front of you, then you can read it over and over, and you can focus on different areas, and then you're going to get more information. And they didn't allow that. So I went on the internet, and that's when I found Wade Dale, and I got to read copies of the lawsuit, and I saw all the information about the mass exodus that was going on as a result of this, and all kinds of things that I didn't expect to find. I was floored. I was totally in shock and unable to comprehend what I was reading. It was just totally unreal to me. It was very surreal. That was my word for the year that year, I think. Surreal. This is so surreal. It's hard to believe. And I ended up telling one of my girlfriends that was in another fellowship. We had lunch together, and I met her for lunch, and we were talking about the lawsuit, but very lightly, you know, because you had to tread on, you were on thin ice with just about everybody by that time because of all the rules that we all had and everybody being watched and expected to be perfect. But I told her I looked up the lawsuit on the internet, and I kept it only to the lawsuit information. And I shared with her, did you know Rosalie knew about this stuff? Did you know? You know, and I was sharing more information with her about the lawsuit itself, the two different lawsuits, I think, and what would have had to be the two different lawsuits. And the things that none of them told us about the lawsuits. And the next fellowship, I get called on the carpet for going on the internet. You know you're not supposed to do that, and you know that you're opening yourself up to be out from under God's hedge of protection. And they had my husband in there at the time, and he, of course, said he didn't know anything about me going on the internet, and he didn't. And he was appalled also that I was being so disobedient and that it wouldn't happen again. And so I got in trouble all the way around, and then I realized I couldn't trust this girl, and she obviously wasn't a friend. And I just told him, I said, I wanted to look at the lawsuit. We didn't get a copy of anything to look at in the meetings. I wanted to see what was going on, and I wanted to read the actual lawsuits. And that's what I did. You didn't go anywhere else? You didn't do anything else? And I'm like, no. And so it was such a big deal that I was pretty pissed at that time. So I went on Waydale, and I read everything that was on there. And I don't think I slept for a month. And I was just paranoid at every meeting that we went to that somebody was going to have a revelation that I was going on the internet and reading all this stuff. And after I got over that and realized I wasn't devil possessed, devil spirit possessed, and that nobody was getting revelation that I was going on the internet, I decided to post. I thought, this is a place where I can get help for me and help figuring out how to get my husband to see the Way Ministry for what it is. And so I first posted on Waydale as Rockin' the Hard Place. And that was too long a name to type, so I didn't post very much on there. But I got some excellent, excellent advice. But I got some help on that, and I kept lurking, and I realized I wasn't the only one in that situation. There was a poster named Chicago Bird, Oak Spear, Abigail. There were a lot of people in the same situation that wanted out and wanted to save their marriage, but their spouses were devoted to the Way. And it was great to find a group of people that were going through the same thing and to have access to people that had been through that and people that had far more wisdom and insight than I did. Because I still couldn't see the forest for the trees. I had no idea how big the forest was and how dark and scary it was all over the place. I'd only ever been in Orlando, so I wasn't exposed to things. And I didn't know a lot of the leadership. You know, I'd read about the Mosquitoes and the Lallies and the Panarellos, and they were really nobody to me. Just names and voices from Sunday teaching service tapes. But other than that, it didn't hold any personal value, I would say. It was shocking to hear that all these upper leaders were leaving, especially leaving in the middle of the night. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And that they were bigwigs in this group. And that was shocking. But, you know, who they actually were, it didn't register with me. It didn't, that part didn't really matter so much. But being able to find help for what I had been going through for the past few years was incredible. And then learning that it was everywhere and that my situation was not unique was very comforting and healing. And then scary, too, in a way, because then it was like, then you realize you're in the belly of the monster, you know, and you've got all these other people around you trying to get out of the belly also. That was scary. So I posted as Rockin' a Hard Place for a little while.
But you didn't stop there, did you?
No, I didn't stop there. Rockin' a Hard Place, I didn't really like the name. And I had really liked Hope Richardson's post. And she had talked about being Stepford believers, how we were all Stepford believers. And you pretend everything's all joyful and rainbows and butterflies. And when you go to fellowship, I mean, you know, you might fight all the way over to fellowship. And as soon as you walk through the door, God bless you. Hi, I'm so blessed to be here. What a great fellowship. That was an awesome teaching. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's what we are. We're Stepford believers. And so I wanted to use that for my name. But I had a brain fart when I came up with my new name, and so I became Wayward Wafer. I meant to be Stepford Wafer, and here I am, Wayward Wafer. And I thought, you know, I don't think I realized that I had screwed that up till like years later. So I was Wayward Wafer, and that was That was an emotional handle, I guess you would call it. That was how I dealt with getting word studies, learning more about the Bible to be able to show my ex-husband how evil the way was and to get help for me. And as things went on, I think Chicago Bird got busted and confronted for posting on Waydale. And then Oaksteer got busted and confronted for posting on Waydale. And the Way Ministry was starting to put out information in different areas that conflicted. And they were doing that specifically to find out who was posting on the internet. They were trying to pick out who these people are. And I thought, how insidious is that? And that alone should be a red flag that this group is out of control and totally wrong kind of group, not a Christian organization, if they're going to go to that great of lengths to try to find out who's posting on the internet. I mean, my God, that's low. That's just like an all-time low.
I didn't even believe it. And I had been out. When I heard that that's what they were doing, I said, they wouldn't go that low, would they? But but they were. They were.
It was so hard to believe. You know, someone would come on and say they had a meeting in our area and this is what they said. And then somebody else would post and say, well, they said this in our meeting, or they didn't say anything about that in our meeting. And then the next thing you know, you're going to a fellowship meeting and you're hearing totally opposite information from even what those other two said. And then you're thinking, that is so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't tell anybody because where did you get your information? From the internet, where you're not supposed to be going. So it's like it's a Mexican standoff, you know?
Right.
You can't confront them because you're getting information from a place you're not supposed to be going, and they're posting that information to find out if you're going where you're not supposed to be going.
Right.
Instead of getting revelation, or heaven forbid that God should tell them something, then they're going to these great lengths to try and get people for going on the internet. And it's none of their business what you do with your personal time. It was surreal. It was extremely surreal. It was like living in the Twilight Zone during that time. So I posted as Wayward Wafer, and I started getting more and more pissed off about the links that the Way Ministry was going through just to trap people. And once they did, they broke up the marriages. You know, Chicago Bird ended up getting divorced. Oaksteer ended up getting divorced. Abigail ended up getting divorced. There was a lot of divorces because of people leaving the Way Ministry and their spouses choosing the ministry over them. And so that was a scary prospect, and it was something I didn't want to think about. And I certainly didn't want to think about the fact that if my husband would choose the Way Ministry over me, then it wasn't really a marriage to begin with. But I didn't want to think about that. I didn't want to acknowledge that, I think. I still held out hope that I would be able to salvage my marriage. So Wayward Wafer was a way for me to get help for me emotionally, with getting my husband to wake up. And I did a lot of corresponding with a lot of other people that were going through the same thing on the board behind the scenes, and they would help me with word studies, or they would help me handle situations with my husband. And I wrote books upon books of emails to Washington Weather and Oaksbeer and Abigail. Those three probably hated seeing my name in their inbox after a while. But that was pretty much all I did.
And that concludes part one of our interview with Belle. Part two will be presented in the next few days. And to whet your appetite, here is something she says to start off the next part of the interview.
And then, out of anger and frustration for what this group of people were doing to our lives and our marriages and trying to hold on to insider information and not wanting anything about them posted on the internet, I decided I was really going to blow the lid off of them, I guess. I was going to stick it to them as best I could. And I wanted to report things that were going on, but I did not want to get busted. And I was trying to think of a really cool name to use to post under. I looked up evil. I looked up enemy. I looked up a bunch of different words. It probably took me like 3 days. Looking through thesauruses and trying to come up with just the proper word for what I wanted to do with this moniker, this screen name. And so I came up with